House Committee on Audits to order on, this is the 5th. This is April 5th. Members, I have a memo here that Jim is going to distribute to you. It is about an off-site meeting that we would like to have on April 26th. I'm letting you know about it now so that you can adjust your schedules accordingly. What we'll do is that we will not meet that morning. It's a Thursday. We will not meet that morning, and instead we will meet in the afternoon. We're going to go to Sherwood and tour the DEQ vehicle inspection facility there, and then or clean air station is what it's called, and then we will from there go over to Middleton Elementary School in Sherwood and have a public hearing with the joint session with the Environment Committee on the DEQ vehicle inspection program. So I would like you to please adjust your schedules accordingly so that you can plan to be there. And if there's any, and I realize that things do come up, but I would really like you to make every effort to be there. I think it will be a very interesting discussion and a very interesting hearing, as well as it will be very enlightening, I think, from a standpoint of seeing how the DEQ clean air stations really work. So Jim has distributed that. With that, then, I'm going to, let's see, we basically just have a bunch of bills in front of us today, and so what we're ready to do is get rolling. Let's see, so let me go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 2028, and Jim, tell us a little bit about this and also about the amendments for it, please.
Yes, sir. House Bill 2028 expands the pool of members eligible to serve on the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, makes the committee review of audit report discretionary, and eliminates the authority of the Budget and Management Division to request an audit by the committee. We have a -1 amendment. It allows the JLAC to make recommendations related to the audit report and allows JLAC to set priorities based on assessment of the risk posed. There is no subsequent referral.
Okay, so this bill can go directly to the floor. Okay.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Butler,
just a brief question of staff relative to the -1 amendments to 2028 dated 2/21/05. Jim, have you run those through and determined that it gives the desired effect that the committee has discussed?
I discussed the amendments with Representative Crumble, and we believe they do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're in work session. I would move House Bill the -1 amendments to the House Bill 2028 effective date 2/21/05.
Thank you. Representative Butler moves the -1 amendments to House Bill 2028. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2028 as amended with the -1 amendments, being thus A, engrossed to the full House with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Butler moves House Bill 2028 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Maybe we better go ahead and call the roll on that. I don't anticipate any objections, but go ahead and call the roll, please.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Representative Greenfelder.
Aye.
Representative Vice Chair Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Vice Chair Butler.
Yes.
Chair Crum.
Aye. House Bill 2028 as amended, having received the constitutional majority, has moved to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Chair, is this a bill that could be considered for the consent calendar?
I think it probably could. Since there was not a lot of discussion here on the amendments, and we vetted the bill pretty well, I think, in our earlier discussions.
Mr. Chair, I note in my file we've had no negative comments, and that former Secretaries of State Barbara Roberts, Phil Kiesling, Clay Myers, Mark Catfield, Marla Paulus have all endorsed these changes. That's why I ask about the -1 amendments. I don't know that they expressed any opinion, but I don't think it's dash one that does anything more than just allows the JLC, JLAC, to make the recommendations relative to audit report and allow that committee to set priorities based upon the assessment risk period.
Correct.
So with that, I just question whether or not that isn't a viable bill for the consent committee or consent calendar.
Is there any objection to it going to this consent calendar?
So
okay. So then, Representative Butler moves House Bill 2028 to the consent calendar on the House floor. Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay. With that, then, I will close our work session on House Bill 2028. Oh. Okay, let's go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 2027. And Jim, give us an update on this one, please.
Let's see, House Bill 2027. We have a dash one amendment, and it retains the requirement that the Secretary of State conduct an auto review when the state agency director retires. It does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
And you want to talk about the? Did you talk about the dash one?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Yes. The in talking with leadership, it was expressed that they felt that leaving the change of director audit or review in place was important, and so the dash one amendments do put that back in to the bill. And then, but the rest of the bill stays as is. The sheriff's portion is deleted as in the bill, and then it also does the rest of the things in terms of setting for financial review, as opposed to a full audit for the semi-independent agencies and that sort of thing. Again, this bill was pretty well vetted, I think, in terms of what we. What we want the bill to do, and so,
Mr. Chair. Just a question relative to the previous discussions. There's been some discussion relative to other work being done by the Secretary of State's Audit Division and the amounts of time and so forth that are going into some of these audits. I just wondered if you had been able to satisfactorily clear any of that up. We'd had various executive directors from the groups that are delineated in the bill talk to us about some of the refocusing our resources on highest risk areas and those kinds of things.
Yes, thank you for the question, Representative, and I have not gone out and actively talked about that, but you'll remember in our hearings that one of the things that was talked about was removing the term, particularly in Section 1, removing the term audit and putting in financial review. That gives the Audits Division a little bit more flexibility from the standpoint of what they feel might be needed with regards to the when they go in and do these agencies. If it only requires a financial review, the cost of that is going to be greatly reduced versus filling in and doing a complete audit. Isn't that correct, Kathy? And I would point out this bill was requested by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, the only real change that we've made to it is with regards to the department head. That was at the request of leadership.
Chair, we have had previous discussions also that 2027 was something that would be looked at in light of 2028, and having passed 2028 now, I think we're probably ready to do that. However, Representative Dinkfelder had a comment.
Yes. Well, I just had a question, and I recall the discussion about the part about the change in executive director, Mr. Chair. It disturbs me a little bit just because of the fiscal impact. I mean, it's almost $1 million. If you know, under the background section where, and yeah. I remember we had discussions about that, 47 changes. Well, 47 over 47 change of director audits, that's a lot in 3 years. And I'm wondering if we can look at some type of minimum and time threshold. In other words, and I'm not a CPA or an auditor, but if there's a minimum threshold where my concern is that sometimes you have 6 months. I've seen 6 month change of directors. And maybe we can look at an amendment, and I don't mean to slow down the process, and I'd maybe like to hear from Kathy if there's a way to say if there's been a change of director within 2 years or 18 months or something. My concern is saving taxpayer money because we're looking at a lot of money here. And how and as Representative Jensen would say, how many teachers could this buy? So I'm thinking in terms of the fact that it does have a relatively high fiscal impact.
I appreciate the question. With regards to the, you'll note that in the language that we would have been taking out, it says an audit or review shall be made of any institution. And I think that by leaving the language or review in place, it gives the Secretary of State's Audits Division the ability to do a review, and if that's all that's required, they can stop there. What leadership is concerned about is that when there's a change of director in an agency, this is sort of a way of kind of handing off the baton and knowing that it was a clean handoff. In other words, the guy going out or the person going out, I should say, knows that they've been given a clean bill of health. They didn't do anything that they weren't supposed to, and the agency was run the way it was supposed to be run. The person coming in knows that they were handed the agency with a clean bill of health. Or maybe they weren't. Maybe they were handed the agency with some issues that need to be resolved, and that could be one of the reasons why they've been called in, is to resolve some of those issues. But understanding that that's been done, then that the agency has at least been looked at, so that there is that handoff with the baton.
Mr. Chair, this has now been subsequently referred to Ways and Means, where the issues of the cost of reviews versus audits on those changes of directors' workups, financial workups, can be done. It's my understanding that this now goes to Ways and Means. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Okay. Okay. Well, so. I just said, I didn't see that because it said no revenue impact.
Well, may have fiscal impact, and now that it's determined as $800,000, having been the historic. Yeah.
So probably when we do the vote, I'll just say for the record that I think this should be reviewed in the Ways and Means process.
Okay. Yeah. That would be fine.
Mr. Chair, we're in work session. I would then move the -1 amendment from April 1st, 2005, to House Bill 2027 to be appended to that bill.
Okay. Representative Butler moves the -1 amendments to House Bill 2027. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, on the amendment, I just want to say that I share the concern that Representative Dingfelder just expressed. I think this committee is all about accountability and requiring audits every time a director changes, which could be a temporary director who was there for a very short time in between two other audits, I think, is not called for. And I am concerned, too, particularly when elsewhere in this building discussions are underway about amounts of money that this could help to close the gap that we're adding or not alleviating the problem in a way that we could. And so I do have a concern about that as well.
Okay. I appreciate that. And the record will reflect those concerns. I do think, though, that as long as there is a term review in there, that the Secretary of State's audit office does know that they can do that a full-blown audit isn't necessarily necessary. And that way, some of those dollars, may be able to be redirected in that respect.
Mr. Chair, it's been my experience, and I think we do have some testimony from the Kathy Klein, the state auditor, that in fact the cost of a review is significantly less, and the scope is significantly different than that of an audit. That you might be able, and I think the work that has been done by the audit folks has demonstrated that they have an ability to mine just those areas that that would perhaps be of the greatest impact in those changes. So I have confidence that by allowing the scope to include reviews, that number one, you will save significant amounts of money, and number two, that the certified smart folks that are doing those reviews will be able to review those areas which are most likely to yield any kinds of discrepancies or concerns as you move from one director to another. And I would be very concerned about not having the level of oversight, some level of oversight, in exchange or in these exchanges of directors, even if it was just for a month or two, because there's enough opportunity to do damage for some, and obviously you're changing them after a month or two for some particular reason. As maybe they don't have the management skills. Maybe they don't. Maybe they're not going to be confirmed for that particular post for some other reason. And so I would be concerned that just because they are there for a short period doesn't mean that they couldn't do a significant amount of damage.
I appreciate that.
There's also some residual issues, and that would be if you don't have someone from outside the agency look at it, there's a possibility that signature cards and those kinds of things could carry over from one administration to the next without having been appropriately changed. Those are all of the kinds of things that I think that the auditor has assisted us with in the past.
I would agree, and thank you. So the motion by Representative Butler is to add the dash one amendments to House Bill 2027. Are there is there any further discussion? Are there objections?
Yes. I object.
Okay. So both.
Yeah, for the reasons that we stated, and one thing is, I was reading through the Mr. Chair under the measure tracking sheet, and we talked about issues discussed, and I guess I'm, you know, one of the bullet points, and I agree with this, is that under the original bill, it would not prevent, and I guess I'm going to look to Kathy, would not prevent an audit for a change in director or a financial review. So I guess it's whether you want to have it in statute that says you're required to do it, or say you may do it if it's deemed necessary, and leaving a little more discretion. I guess that would be my preference, so that's why I'm not supporting the amendment, because I am concerned about the fiscal impact.
Okay.
I'm fine with the rest of the bill.
Okay. With that, then, let's go ahead and on the motion for the amendment, go ahead and call the roll, please.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Representative Dean Feller.
No.
Vice Chair Rosenbaum.
No.
Vice Chair Butler.
Yes.
Chair Cummins.
Aye. The dash ones, having received the majority, are adopted into House Bill 2027.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Butler.
I'm just wondering if this, because this now goes to the Ways and Means, I'm wondering if we should, with the expressed considerations and concerns by our colleagues in this committee, if we should refer this to the Ways and Means without as to any recommendation. Letting them sort through
the issue. Sort through them?
Because, as I recall, they're in the process of taking a look at the whole process of the audits division down there anyway.
Okay. The chair would certainly entertain that
kind of move. That 2027 as A engrossed to be moved to the Ways and Means, the full committee, the full committee on Ways and Means without recommendation.
Representative Butler moves House Bill 2027 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means without recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Are there any? Well, go ahead and call the roll.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Representative Dean Feller.
Aye.
Vice Chair Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Vice Chair Butler.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2027, having received a constitutional majority, has moved to the Committee on Ways and Means with no recommendation. So with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2027. And we will now move on to, I'm going to open a public hearing. A public hearing on House Bill 2166. And Jim, would you give us a rundown on this bill, please?
2166 deletes the provisions allowing municipal corporations to request the Secretary of State to develop or revise and install accounting systems, modifies requirements that contracts for conducting municipal audits be provided to the Secretary of State, modifies language to conform with current practices. This bill has no amendments, and there is no subsequent referral.
Thank you. And there is no one to testify.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
I just had a question on the bill, on the face page of the bill, page one.
Yes.
Line items 23, 24, 25. Those were all obsolete provisions. Do we have any testimony relative to the compensation for installment?
You know what? I don't remember. And Kathy, can you or your staff answer that question for me? You need to come up to the table and state your name for the record. The regular drill. And we are in public hearing, so.
Good morning, Chair Crummell, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Phil Hopkins. I'm an audit manager with the Secretary of State Audits Division. House Bill 2166 was brought to you as a house cleaning bill because, as previously stated, due to some issues like installing accounting systems and stuff, this is an issue that was never, it was put in place, I think, at least 30 years ago. There's nobody here. But it's never been used by any governments. They do not call upon us to install any of their accounting systems or that. They go to either, if they're small government, they use QuickBooks and stuff like that, or they develop their own accounting systems, nor do we have the staff to send around the state to develop systems for them. So what we're looking here to do is to eliminate the reference to that, and then that section 23.24.5 talks about how we would be compensated, it's currently stated how would we be compensated. Well, if we're not going to do it, then the issue of compensation is a non-issue.
Okay. Does that satisfy your question?
I think that was the question, was that it had never been used, and therefore it was obsolete now and would thus be obviously not necessary. And Mr. Chair, in our previous meeting in January on this particular bill, I had a concern relative to the overall continuation of the issue of municipal auditors, and this bill could have been used as a vehicle relative to some kind of discussion relative to bringing the Board of Accountancy to the table with the Oregon Society of CPAs and the American Institute of CPAs to discuss the Oregon's issue with the fact that we do have that unique set of licenses in the state of Oregon. However, it's my understanding that the position of both the board and the CPAs in Oregon are all working in cooperation and in agreement with this legislation, so I certainly wouldn't stand in the way of it passing at that point.
Okay.
However, my preference, and I'll express it again, is that this bill be it used at least in part, to consider the possibility of coming back and addressing this municipal audit license that the state of Oregon is unique in the United States and in the world of having an auditor's license that adds a tremendous cost to the overall administration of the licensure,
mm-hmm.
and a cost to those folks and municipal organizations who have to have these licenses. This work done. The best national or international firm out of New York State cannot come and audit the books of the state of Oregon because of what our own licensure requires. Not that we would want them here, Phil. Not advocating for a minute. But that's my own personal observation. Excuse me.
Okay. I appreciate that. Have you talked with the Legislative Council at all as to whether or not some of those provisions would fit in here with the
Legislative Council? Mr. Chair, yes. It was my understanding that the amendments could be prepared for the Board and the OSCPA and SOSAT to work on an interim work group to bring the 2007 Legislative Assembly a recommendation as to Oregon's municipal licensure. And we have not, to this particular point, done that. And it's my understanding that this would be a vehicle to do that, at least to establish that kind of a work group. And I'm still very interested in that, and I realize that I'm playing in somebody else's sandbox at this particular point. This is an area that's very, very, it's a very tender area, particularly for those people who have in fact applied for and have received those municipal licenses, and it's a very, very, very tender area for those people who have just been grandfathered in and given those licenses. That were in practice in Oregon on a certain date. I have absolutely no interest in any audits. I've never been involved other than just what was required for licensure and the internship work in audits. And so this is not an area that would benefit me. It is an area that I think would ultimately benefit virtually every school board, every city, every county, state of Oregon, if this licensure was examined so that Oregon could go ahead and say, fine, we want out of every 2 years or every 4 years of relicensure, we would like to have you take, if you're going to be doing municipal work, and that's, again, the first standard of field requirements, is that you're not to engage in any work that you do not have a continuing education or the competency to engage in. And so, again, this has been a long concern of mine, but I don't know that it raises to the level of getting anybody else's attention. So, but if I could show you that you could buy 15 or 20 teachers in your schools, as Representative Jensen has indicated, for the cost, the additional cost that's passed on to our municipal agencies through this kind of unique to Oregon licensure. And recognize that Oregon and in these particular areas, we've adopted some areas that are very, very unique, that are not supported. As a matter of fact, I think the American Institute of CPAs has actually come out with a pronouncement in opposition to Oregon's unique licensure, that it is in violation of the first field standard, that you have to have a separate license to do this kind of work. Which means that the accountants in the rest of the 49 states cannot do work in Oregon under the municipal programs, and it would mean that the best accounting firms in the world cannot come to Oregon and participate in any of these kinds of activities without having an Oregon licensed municipal accountant to sign off on each of the steps. So if this bill could be utilized for that, I'd be happy to take it back down to the Legislative Council and see if an amendment could fit into it, and then report back, Mr. Chair. But I'd want concurrence from the other members, because that could slow the bill down and it could be the death of it too.
Any further discussion? We're not in work session right now. We're in a public hearing. I don't know, Phil, if you have any comments relative to what Representative Butler is suggesting or not.
Chair Crummell, Representative Butler. Well, I haven't given a lot of thought about it, but I do remember last time we appeared here. There's nobody in the audits division who was here at the time when that became a requirement. I do believe, though, that and we're talking decades ago, 70s or the 60s, I believe back at that time, what happened was and part of this is guesswork, but part of it is just having been with the audits division for 21 years. We wanted to get out of the municipal audit business and focus strictly on auditing state agencies. And at one point in time, so what happens is, I think that the Secretary of State and the audits division, and possibly the Board of Accountants, I can't speak for them, at that time, we were supportive of having this additional licensing requirement, I think, for two reasons. One is that Representative Butler is correct in terms about having the requirements to perform an audit, to be a licensed CPA, such as myself, is all you need. And that is true. But one thing that Oregon does, in addition to having an audit that is performed in accordance with auditing standards, professional auditing standards, is we have some additional requirements that are specific to Oregon that we require the auditors to do in addition to auditing those statements. And what I mean by that is, for example, they have to look at several areas of laws, compliance with things like deposits of public funds. They actually have to go in and look at those governments when they go out there and make sure that the funds are being deposited as they're supposed to be. Make sure that they have legal investments, that their money is not in Microsoft. I don't own stock in Microsoft, but you know, I have conservative types of investments. We have laws related to public contracting. The auditors are supposed to go look at that. We have a requirement specific. These are specific additional requirements we ask of the auditors. One is to look at highway funds, the expenditures of highway funds, to make sure they're in compliance with laws and the Constitution. We have an additional requirement to look at the ADM, average daily membership formula. We had that in place a couple years ago. And I don't want to bore you with all the details, but the point is we had some additional requirements out there, and I think that might have been one of the driving forces. The second, and the only other one, was that 30, 40 years ago, our professional standards back then were not real specific about documenting work and having a lot of working papers and that. So what the audits division is, they wanted to provide specific guidance to those accounting firms out there. And so we have sections in our administrative rules that address the specific, these are suggested audit procedures that auditors would do when they go out and do an audit. Like, how do you confirm tax revenues were received and all kinds of issues, and it kind of guides them. It's almost like audit programs. So I think that the audits division wanted to make sure that the audits were done not only in accordance with professional auditing standards, but also the additional requirements that we're here for Oregon. So I think that's the driving force that put it in place initially. Is that still relevant? I don't know.
But Bill, hang on one second, Representative. Don't other states require all that too? And hasn't a lot of that been addressed now through the Government Accounting Standards Board and some of the other sorts of things that are out there on a national basis? I mean, I understand that Oregon's a special place, and I understand that we have a whole bunch of special people here. But you know, it seems like we go against the tide, and it costs us dollars that we don't need to spend, I don't know. Maybe I'm off base here, but you know, it seems to me when we get something like what Representative Butler is talking about, it seems like maybe what we need to do is and I know we're a state of nonconformists, but maybe there's a few things that we can conform ourselves into and save people some money instead of always figuring out how we can spend their money.
Well, Chair Crowell, members of the committee, I think that if that particular time, I think that the audits division was supportive of providing guidance for audits local governments. Is that still needed today in light of the fact that there's been revolutionary changes in terms of documenting your work and stuff like that? I think that the Secretary of State would be neutral on this position.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say this. Mr. Hopkins, it is Mr. Hopkins.
Yes, Hopkins.
All of the things that you delineated as being the kinds of things that an auditor would do in Oregon, with regard to the disposition under the various specific programs, agency programs, do you know of any of those that are different in any other state other than the state laws are different in those states? In other words, the auditor would still have to confirm that the Department of Transportation monies were used in accordance with the Department of Transportation edicts and guidelines, whether it was local transportation money or federal Department of Transportation DOT money. The same with education dollars, the same with any of the other kinds of programs. So the fact that Oregon's laws might be unique with regard to calculations of ADMW, other states are going to have some kinds of laws that are unique. The auditors would still have to apply those same standards in those states, and that's why I say that is that in each state the auditors have to have a broad enough scope before they accept the engagement of an understanding of state law before they can actually accept the engagement. I think that's where we fell out of favor with the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. They said, wait a minute, you're saying that Oregon is so unique that your laws have to be, that your auditors have to adhere to a whole group of
of reporting standards, ascertainable reporting standards down here, but when they go to California, then they've got a whole different set of laws and they have to report on those down there. So an Oregon accountant with a municipal tag can go to California, or an Oregon accountant without a municipal tag can go to California, as long as they have the competency to do so. But the auditor of the state of California cannot come and help me do the audit of the Vail School District.
Chair Cromwell, Representative Butler, you are correct that the requirements in the municipal audit law is that the auditors perform an audit in accordance with called generally accepted auditing standards. They are prescribed by the American Institute of CPAs. It is no different in this state than it is in any other state. The only point I was trying to bring out is that perhaps back then they wanted to provide some guidance, so we had some administrative rules put in place. I'm guessing somewhat because I wasn't here then, and there is nobody. The audit division was here then, but I think the intent was good. I think the intent was to provide guidance, but you are absolutely correct. We do not place any higher auditing standards than those prescribed by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants.
Thank you.
I think this must go back to the McCall years when we wanted people to come and visit, just not stay here. Okay. Thank you. Carol Reeves, I see you're in the back there. Would you like to come up and, I don't know, maybe you wouldn't. Yeah, then we're done, Bill. Thank you. Would you like to come up and maybe address some of the issues that Representative Butler has brought up?
Chair Cromwell, members of the committee, my name is Carol Reeves. I'm the administrator for the Oregon Board of Accountancy. The information that I might be able to tell you may be repetitive from what you've already heard. I can tell you about our municipal auditor program. This idea is not one that's been considered by the board, so I can't speak for the board's opinion, but I'm glad to tell you what the requirements are for a municipal auditor. CPAs in general are required to, number one, demonstrate competency before they receive the license, and demonstrate continued competency as they practice through their continuing education. The primary requirements for the municipal auditor are in continuing education. They must obtain 40 hours before in designated classes before receiving the license, and then they must continue by obtaining 24 hours every renewal period. Representative Butler has suggested that requirement or competency may be met through this requirement, and I agree with him. I think it's entirely possible. Right now, every licensee has an obligation to take those 80 hours that are required for renewal in areas that develop and contribute to their professional competency. So if they are performing only tax, they wouldn't be taking CPE or continuing education in audit, for example. But if they're municipal auditors, they would, as a matter of self-preservation and protection, be taking continuing education in the municipal audit area. So I think that the special requirement that those who are performing municipal audits would be required to continue with the 24 hours and show that on their renewal report would satisfy that competency question. The question that would remain would be the initial competency, the 40 hours that are required when someone receives that license. And I'm sure that there would be a vehicle for managing that. The Oregon Board has brought a bill this year to remove a requirement from our statute that required an Oregon CPA license in addition to the municipal auditor license before a professional could perform any municipal audits in Oregon. That provision was placed in statute, I think, 4 years ago, and I believe it was done so inadvertently. And when we discovered it, it obviously needed to be removed. And one of the primary reasons for having that removed is because the municipal audits are performed according to the same standards that municipal audits are performed in every other state. And that bill has passed out of the House and is waiting to be heard in the Senate. I have every expectation that that will pass, and that has, of course, the full support of the Professional Association as well. I think that Representative Butler's suggestion may be a very viable suggestion. It may be a time for the board to look at this and determine how they can meet the competency requirement if it's necessary at the get-go before receiving the license, but continued competency would not be any issue whatsoever through the continuing education requirement and placing that same obligation upon licensees to obtain a certain number of hours for continued practice as a municipal auditor. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'll volunteer my time and energy in the interim to assist in any way that I can to try and get this whole issue brought back to the point where Oregon is a more compatible state with the national guidelines of the American, as promulgated by the American Institute.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have anybody else that wanted to testify on this? Okay. Okay, thank you, Carol. I think what I would like to do, Representative, is ask you to go ahead and I recognize the interim and you know that sort of thing. But this may be something that we don't need to put off for a couple of years. So I'm going to ask you if you would go ahead and talk to our Legislative Council about this issue. Maybe talk with Carol a little bit more. I know she said there's a Senate bill out there, but you never know what's going to happen. And this is a bill that we have control of over here. And so so before I take this to work session, I'd like to ask you to go ahead and do that. Okay?
I will.
Thank you. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2166. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2001. And okay. I'm going to, we're going to this one first. I just got couple of reasons. Jim, you want to give us a little update on this one, please?
House Bill 2001 creates the Director of Legislative Audit Office appointed by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, authorizes the Director to conduct performance and management audits of state agencies and programs and other state-funded programs, requires the Director to maintain a government waste hotline, repeals statutory authority of the Secretary of State to conduct performance and program audits, declares an emergency effective on passage. We do have a dash one amendment. The amendment.
Please talk about the dash three amendments.
I'm sorry. Dash three amendment.
Thank you.
It amends the membership of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, their requirement to meet, and the terms of office.
Thank you. Members, the dash three amendments on this bill will put it in line with House Bill 28 that we just passed in terms of the membership, so there would not be a conflict there. But the other thing that it does is that it also, you'll note on page four, let's see, it actually it leaves everything else I think pretty much the same as the rest of the bill. So that's really the only significant change with the dash three amendments. And so and I opened a public hearing, didn't I? Okay. I don't have anyone signed up to speak on the bill. Is there anyone that out there that wants to speak on the bill before I close the public hearing? Okay, with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2001. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2001.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash three amendments of the 1st of April 2005 to the House Bill 2001.
Thank you. Representative Butler moves the dash three amendments to House Bill 2001. Is there a discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2001 to the Full Ways and Means Committee with due pass recommendation.
This does have a subsequent review.
Yes, sir, that's
correct. Yes. Okay. Representative Butler moves House Bill 2001 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. Did you say with a
due, with pass, a due pass recommendation?
With a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had obviously a lot of testimony and discussion of this bill at our previous public hearing, and for me, I have significant concerns about the bill. I think one area of that would be the constitutionality of it. I think looking at some previous Attorney General's opinions, although they may be from a while ago, it seems to raise quite a cloud for me. But beyond that, I also think as a practical matter, you know, we have a function right now that is, I think, is working well. And I haven't heard any testimony to persuade me that it needs to be changed. The one thing I would say is that we have heard repeated offers by the Secretary of State to work with this legislature to do audits in any area that we would think needed to be audited. I have heard no testimony that they have ever refused such a request, and they're in fact encouraging us to do that. So I don't really see why we're accomplishing anything with this bill that isn't possible now, and I really think in these times of budget problems that maneuvering and changes like this, which could cause significant fiscal impact, are simply uncalled for, and therefore I will not be able to support the motion.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, to my motion.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that by moving this to Ways and Means, that policy discussion relative to the fiscal ability can continue on with regard to this particular legislation. And to Representative Rosenbaum's point, I think that I think it would be very important for us to recognize that probably there wouldn't be a change in personnel as much as there would be a change in the reporting mechanism. And the reporting mechanism, I think, sometimes we tend to want to get after the messenger, and I don't think that maybe is always the best thing to do, particularly where the messenger is an elected officer of the state, a statewide elected officer. And by moving the message and messenger over to a non-elected agency, which is overseen by 90 elected legislators, I think I could lend a great deal of additional credibility to the fact that there is none of these kinds of things are being done as a result of political maneuvering.
Thank you. Representative Dingfield.
Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment. We often get confused because we look so
I'm pulling a Jensen here. I'm looking at you.
I know. I was thinking about that. I'm often always honored by being confused with some of my colleagues. But in addition to the concerns that Representative Rosenbaum raised, I too will be a no vote. And I as far as just sending a message to Ways and Means, that I have a concern also about the constitutionality. But in addition. My concern is the cost if we're going to be duplicating some functions. One of the things that I did hear the Secretary of State's office mention, which I was fairly persuasive for me, is that they use their pool of auditors and sort of shift around during at different times of the year. My understanding, especially for the federal grants that they have to audit and federal dollars, and that by separating the two, then we may end up actually not being able to develop that function, or I should say implement that function in an efficient manner. So I'm concerned about additional potential additional costs, also about duplicative efforts, and also about the independent review function. I actually support, and I know some states do it through the legislature and some states do it separately, I personally support the independent review function, because my concern is with 90 people having 90 different views of what agency should be audited, I'm not sure that we'd ever come to agreement. So I actually, it's one of these, I think we're just going to have to agree to disagree about the independent review function versus having the legislature involved. So I think we had a really good discussion. I have lots and lots of notes on this, and I too was not persuaded that we needed the change, so I will be no vote.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move the previous question.
Thank you. Representative Butler moves the previous question. The motion is to move House Bill 2001 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means for the due pass recommendation. Clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Representative
Dingfelder.
No.
Vice Chair Rosenbaum.
No.
Vice Chair Butler.
Butler votes yes.
Chair Kummer.
Aye. House Bill 2001, as amended with the having received the majority vote, is moved to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you, members, for the discussion. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2001, and we will now move on to House Bill 2029. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2029. And Jim, if you would give us a little update on this, please.
Yes, sir. House Bill 2029. The measure changes the biennial reporting requirements for semi-independent state agencies, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage. And it does not have a subsequent referral, and it does not have any amendments.
Thank you. You'll note that this was another bill that was presented to us by the Joint Legislative Audits Committee. I think Jim mentioned that. On Friday, and this was not an April Fool, we received a request from the Appraiser Certification Licensure Board. And Bob, I know that you're here in the audience, and appreciate you being here. Did you want? We are in a public hearing. Did you want to say anything about this request? We were unable to get this request through Legislative Council as far as having them drafted, but I didn't know if he, and the email members came from Robin Breen, who is one of our assistant attorney generals, and Bob, I didn't know if you want to come on up, and because we didn't have this anyway, well, let's see what Bob has to say.
Chair Kremel, members of the committee, my name is Bob Keith, and I'm the administrator of the Appraiser Certification and Licensure Board. And as a point of clarification, our attorney's name is Robin McGinnity. And so,
oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I testified at the 2027 hearing initially, and tried to explain why the Appraiser Certification Board was called out specifically in that bill. And in my testimony, I explained that our agency was the only agency that received its authority to exist as a semi-independent agency within its own statute, ORS 674. All of the other semi-independent agencies received their statutory authority to exist through ORS 182.
Right.
And so since 2029 had a broad enough relating clause to make this change, it was recommended that we try to get that done at that point. I might also mention that the legislative analyst for the Legislative Fiscal Office, Adrian Sexton, has recommended that we make this change.
Okay.
And I've actually got a letter from her that I could leave with you now, or if it's too late, I can.
If you have enough copies, go ahead and give it to staff, and staff will distribute it. That would be fine. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add?
No, I'd be happy to answer questions. Thank you for the opportunity to.
Okay. Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Keith? Bob, I do have a question, what I'd like to do is make a suggestion. And I don't do this very often because I think that, you know, we should send bills the way we want them over to the other house and let them do what they're going to do. And then if we like what they did, we say okay. And if we don't like what they did, then we don't say okay. I have not had a chance to really review in detail the amendments, but I'm assuming that they just deal with the appraisers board. And I don't know if anybody's mentioned it yet or not, but I am going to put on the record that it's now late in the session. See, on March, what was it, about 30th, it was still early in the session, but then on March 31st, it became late in the session. So we have now passed that point where it's now late in the session, and if we want to get bills moving, we really need to get them moving. So what I'm going to suggest is this, is that we move this bill out of here and get it out of the House and over to the Senate side. Work with the committee administrator and committee chair over there early, like now, and ask them to have your amendments drafted by LC. That will give LC more time to get them done. And then go ahead and amend it on the Senate side. And I, you know, members, this is a real change for me, because I don't normally do this, but go ahead and amend it on the Senate side, and then that also gives me a chance to review these, and then when it comes back over from the Senate with the amendments in there, we can look at those and make sure that it's not anything that we object to, which I'm not anticipating that it is anything that we object to, and then we would do a concurrent vote on the House side, and then the bill would go to the governor. So I would like to make that suggestion because of the time frame of where we are in the session, and if you don't have an objection to sort of taking that approach.
Chair Crummell, that sounds like a fine idea, and thank you for that.
Okay. Members, I don't know how you feel about that, if that's something that,
Just one last comment.
Sure.
That we have absolutely no desire to be treated any differently than any of the other semi-independent agencies. And fortunate with 2027 that we caught it, we were able to be added to that bill. But it is possible in the future that a bill could come forward that would affect semi-independent agencies, and then this semi-independent agency, the appraiser board, would be inadvertently left out. So we're trying to correct that. And I thank you for your consideration.
And I do appreciate you trying to correct that. Thank you. So I'm going to ask if that's all right, we take that approach. And so there are, at this point, members, there are no amendments for the for House Bill 2029. And Representative Rosenbaum.
Are we in a work session?
Oh, no, we're not. We're still in a public hearing, aren't we? Thank you, Bob. Is there anyone else that wanted to speak on House Bill 2029? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2029. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2029. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House Bill 2029 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Rosenbaum moves House Bill 2029 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. I would just point out the record is already very clear in terms of what our intentions are with this bill and with Mr. Keith's sort of okay and my agreement or our agreement to look at amendments from the Senate, then we'll do that and thank you again for bringing that to our attention. With that, please call the roll.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Representative
Zinkel.
Aye.
Vice Chair Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Excused. Aye. House Bill 2029, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Jim, for consent calendar, is it a majority? Does the full committee have to be here in order to, and it has to be unanimous on the full committee, or is it...
I believe it's the majority, but if you want, I can check with the...
Would you check with the chief clerk real quick? Members, I'm going to have us just stand at ease for a minute while Jim checks on that, because I don't see any reason why this couldn't just go ahead and go to the consent.
Yeah.
I think I will take...
For the House, is there any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Excused, but if she requests, I'll open it back up so that she can vote.
Vice Chair Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Vice Chair Butler.
Excused.
Chair
Crummell. Aye. House Bill 2029, having received the majority for a consent calendar, is approved, and so House Bill 2029 will go to the floor on the consent calendar. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2029, and thank you very much. Now, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2382. Jim, would you give us a little rundown on this, please?
House Bill 2382 requires an annual audit or review of accounts and fiscal affairs of municipal corporations, sets conditions for conduct of an audit or review. We have a -1 amendment. The amendment, what it does, the original bill put the cap at $1 million. The -1 amendment brings it back to a cap of $500,000 so that when their the expenditure amount is $500,000 or more, it does trigger an audit or review. And there is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. So, we have one person, Phil, is signed up to speak on this. And members, you'll remember, I did the dash one amendment based on some testimony that we had earlier. You'll remember that there would have been several agencies that would have been, have become not having to have any kind of review done. And I thought that that was a little bit much. And so I think that the accountability issue is very important here, as was talked about in one of our earlier discussions. And so I had the dash one amendments drafted to take that threshold and move it back to $500,000. I have advised the sponsor of the bill that I was going to do that, and she did not object. Phil?
Chair Crummell, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Phil Hopkins. I'm an audit manager with the Secretary of State Audits Division. Secretary of State is neutral on this particular bill. However, there is three things that the reason I came here this morning to testify was there's three items that I wanted to point out, and this should only take about 5 minutes. One is there's a technical correction that was previously addressed in the last meeting that has not been amended. Secondly, there is another bill similar to this in several ways that's being heard in another committee this week that proposes to make some changes. And then lastly, the third issue is this bill primarily seeks to change the formula and what triggers an audit. And what I would like to present to you today is just another thought, not an endorsement or a lobby for, but just another way to look at this audit issue and what triggers audits. But I think I can be really brief in this. Okay. The first issue has to do with the technical correction. This was brought up in the last session. On page 3, section 4, it makes reference to, it says, in adopting the rule, Secretary of State shall consider the definition of those terms generally accepted accounting principles, and then also mentions the Government Accounting Standards Board. The context in which this language is used is supposed to actually not refer to generally accepted accounting principles, but generally accepted auditing standards, because this whole bill seeks to amend auditing standards, not accounting principles. So that should say generally accepted auditing standards. And further, the reference to the Governmental Accounting Standards Board should also be removed, because auditing standards are promulgated by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants.
Okay.
So this was brought up last time, and that's some, you know, related to our last bill, we wouldn't want to have to come back and make a technical correction at some future session just on this small issue. The second issue is there is House Bill 2911 being heard in general government, scheduled for a hearing on Thursday.
Yes.
That bill is somewhat similar to this, but they also seek to change the thresholds for audits and reviews. And I'm not quite sure how that's going to compute if both of these bills come out. It also has some other changes that they want to put in place, but I think the biggest issue is two different thresholds, and so I just want to make you aware of this if you want to bring those together or however you...
I appreciate that. I have talked with the chair of the General Government Committee, and I think that what we sort of decided is that Legislative Council would recognize any conflicts. They track those, and then there would be a conflict amendment to settle on the amount. I don't know that. I think that they that bill wants to move it to $750,000. If I'm not mistaken,
I have a copy of the bill there. I think they wanted to raise that initial threshold for a review from $150,000 to $250,000, and then they wanted to take the review and move that from $500,000 to $600,000. So there's that part of it, and then also there's another section to where they are proposing to have an exclusion from an audit or a review if there are situations where a government all of a sudden has a situation of non-recurring expenditures, meaning that something significant happened this year and they weren't otherwise subject to an audit or a review, and all of a sudden it would put them into that threshold, it's kind of like a get out of jail free card this year or up to 2 years if you will certify to the Secretary of State that this was a non-recurring, I think that's the language they use in the bill, non-recurring transaction. And
okay.
So that's kind of an important issue, too. So it has that other part to it.
And I don't think that creates a conflict with this particular bill. And one of the things that earlier I was advised by legislative counsel is always take each bill as its own package, as opposed to trying to figure this out, and that they will any conflicts like that. I can talk with the chair of the General Government Committee again about these thresholds. But we can any conflicts like that we can address. I do appreciate you reminding us though about the auditing standards, and we did not have any amendments drafted to address that. And maybe that is something that we ought to have done. And then, Phil, would you be willing to work with staff on just maybe send an email that says this is where it needs to, and this is the language that needs to go in there.
Sure.
And then we could go ahead and request that amendment to be drafted, and then send it off to and get so request when as soon as Phil sends that to you, Jim, if you would request the amendment from legislative council, then we could probably bring this back next Tuesday to take care of it.
It's a real simple fix.
And I you're right, it is. It's just a matter of, I know LC is really swamped right now, and so and that was the only thing that we had. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
And with regards to the other thresholds, then I think it would, I think they any conflict. But I will talk with the general government chair about that also, about those thresholds.
Okay, the last issue. Should I address that,
Matt? Sure, yes, please
okay.
do.
The last issue has to do with, just kind of as a reminder, as a recap, this bill seeks to change the current formula in law, which says whatever triggers an audit or review is the combined total of revenues plus expenditures. And the proposal to change this says, let's change that threshold to either revenues or expenditures. Well, all things being equal in budget law, that probably would result in doubling the threshold without actually raising the amount, because you can use it either or to get out of it. But there's just another thought that I wanted to share with the committee, having worked with the division for 21 years. In the last 10 years, I worked with the municipal audit program. And I can point you specifically to page 2 in either sections 2 or 4 where it says total receipt from all expenditures or expenditures. I think that something that you might consider is, if you want to amend the law, make it expenditure driven as opposed to either revenues or expenditures. And there's two reasons for it. One, I'm an auditor. I've been auditor all my life, and we know as auditors that when if a local government wants to get a grant, or they were to go to the bank and they get a loan, okay, and all of a sudden they have this windfall revenue source that comes in, it's oftentimes it's like one lump payment. But because of the way the law is written, sometimes it triggers an audit. And so the auditor is required to go in and perform the audit because they've reached the threshold, but it's generally based on one transaction. Oftentimes it's just one transaction as opposed to a government just getting larger and larger over a period of years. But auditors know that that isn't the real risk. I mean, if we're looking for accountability, it's very easy to go out and confirm that the revenue is justified, that it's recorded, and it's properly deposited. And that the real issue is how is the money spent? That's where all the risk is in auditing. That's where the auditors spend most of their time, is looking how that money was spent. So, for instance, if they get a grant, was the money spent according to the grant requirements? If they issue a bond and here comes $1 million and goes into their bank account, did they spend those proceeds as required for the purposes for which that whole debt issuance was issued? Or whether it's a state or federal grant or something like that, okay? And furthermore, I think that can... So anyway, the auditors, we see that as being the risk. That's where it works. It's how money is spent. It's not whether they got it. I mean, it's, you know, it's already been approved either by the board or by elections or voter approval. Secondly, I get a lot of phone calls every year. I probably get about 1,000 calls a year from CPA firms, local government officials, and citizens. And the citizens that call me, they never call to question, and when they're calling, they have concerns, obviously. They never call to say that they have an issue with a grant that a government received, or that the loan was taken out. That's all pretty well known, and, you know, it's all public information. What they always call about is the concern on how the money is spent. They're saying them this money, whether it be, another example is like highway funds, right? All cities and counties receive highway funds. They get a lot of highway funds, in fact. Well, nobody ever complains about the money coming to the city or the county about the highway funds, but I get a lot of calls on how that money was spent, that it wasn't spent to fix potholes and street maintenance and stuff, that in fact there are allegations that the money was misspent for some other kind of purpose. And so I'm just bringing up this notion about it seems that the risk in auditing, and it seems like citizens' concerns and everybody else's concerns, is all driven around how money is spent in government, not about obtaining it. And so what I did, just for the fun of it, this morning, I did a little sheet here, a little worksheet, which I provided to the committee. And it has what you have in place here, the dash one amendment on how... Remember, we did this exercise last year,
right?
Like we had all those audits from last year. And this would be the effect on House Bill 23-1. And then I did one by using the formula, by making it expenditure-driven only. And the results are pretty similar. I mean, when you compare this first page, like audits will drop under dash one, it'll drop by 263 versus 284 under the threshold of expenditures only. It's not a big difference. Or that a review under the dash one will increase by 96 versus 100. It's not a whole lot of money. I just wanted to make some comparison because I know you would have in your mind like, all right, Hopkins, so what's the effect of all this stuff? So anyway, I just put this out there for your consideration. It's just something to think about, but the reason I brought it up is those issues I have.
Phil, do you have an idea of how that language should be changed?
Actually, it's actually very simple because the way the law says now, it just says combine. Well,
right.
It says all sources.
It says total receipts from all sources and expenditures. This bill would say or expenditures. Are you suggesting then that it would just be total expenditures for all purposes?
Yes.
So we would just delete the receipts from all sources,
including borrowings or right.
Okay, so it would just be the total receipts, it would be total expenditures for all purposes, including money obtained. And that would be in section sub 2, it's becoming
be sub 2 and also in...
sub 1A, And then in section 3?
Yeah, it's line 26.
Okay.
Total receipts from all sources and expenditures, and then also on line 14, on page 2.
Okay.
Yeah, it's as I say, it's just a thought. It's kind of based on a history of talking to citizens and other kinds of people and being an auditor.
Would you Because they're also in sub 3 on line 38, it looks like, with respect to anyone on the calendar, the total receipts from all sources or expenditures, they would need to be taken out of there as well. Did you mention that?
I didn't mention that, but you are correct.
Okay. Would you, when you are sending your other email relative to Section 4, would you be willing to include that as well?
Sure.
And then, and I think what I'll do, because it is a kind of a policy shift, I'll ask Jim to actually have two amendments drafted, which would not conflict with each other, so that if we wanted to adopt both of them, but that gives us, because of the policy shift numbers, that gives us the opportunity to discuss the two separate policy issues there. Is that sound all right to you? That's all of the areas that would need to be changed, isn't it? Because the rest of the bill is actually pretty much kind of housekeeping sort of stuff. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Are there any questions for Phil? Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate you bringing that to our attention. Is there anyone else that wishes to comment on House Bill 2382? Seeing none, then I'm going to before I close the public hearing, then Jim, after you get that from Phil, if you would have two amendments drafted, please, one that has that would make the bill expenditure driven, and one that and then the other one dealing with Section 4 issues, and then what we can do. And I don't really care if the amendments if the amendments are separate from the 500,000 or from the dash one, and we can actually just adopt make it sort of a cafeteria choice. We can adopt all three amendments or none of the amendments, whatever our feeling is on that. Okay, terrific. With that, then I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2382. It seems like we don't have anything else before us. Representative Dinkfelder?
I wanted to see if I could vote on, since I was out of the room, vote on that consent calendar.
Yes, let's see. Chair requests unanimous. Do we have to put the bill back in front of us, or can I just reopen the work session? I think I can just reopen the
work session. Reopen the
work session. Okay. I'm going to reopen the work session on House Bill. Is that 2029?
Yeah, it's 2029.
Okay. I'm going to reopen a work session on House Bill 2029 for purposes of allowing Representative Dinkfelder to vote on the consent calendar issue. Chair requests unanimous consent to allow Representative Dinkfelder to vote on the motion to put House Bill 2029 on a consent calendar. Is there any objections? So ordered. Representative Dinkfelder, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Dinkfelder votes aye. With that, then it has the constitutional majority and requirement is met to be placed on a consent calendar, and so House Bill 2029 will be put on the consent calendar on the House floor. Thank you very much. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2029. Is there anything else that we need to do now? I don't think so. With that, then we will stand adjourned. Thank you very much.
I know it's in the.